recorded live on New Year's Eve, 1991. That was Beethoven's Choral Fantasy. Evgeny Kisin was the pianist. Claudio Abbado led the Berlin Philharmonic and the RIAS Chamber Choir. There were a number of soloists, too, but we won't get into all that. I'm Gillian Martin. So glad to have your company on this Saturday. It's the birthday of comedian Lily Tomlin. She is 68 years old.
You are listening to WHFR Dearborn, and thank you for listening to this beautiful classical programming. If talk programming of a different nature is something that might suit you, let me suggest some great opportunities for that here at 89.3 FM. Friday mornings from 10 until 11 a.m., it's the new WHFR Journal, hosted by Mr. Jay Koronick and sometimes special guest hosts. And you will find an opportunity there to hear the latest of what's going on here in Dearborn, in the community, some local news and views that you just don't want to miss. Also, Saturday mornings, 10 until 11, it's a show we call The Forum. Every week, it's a different opportunity to learn about different subjects. We have Metaphysically Speaking, Pet Lover's Lane, We Are Not Alone, and Then and Now. Great opportunities to learn a variety of bits of information that you just won't hear anywhere else. It's talk programming at its best right here on 89.3 FM.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn, non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College. It's time for We Are Not Alone.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. Hi, I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And for the next hour, we will be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. We'll be joining our guests shortly, but first I want to remind our loyal listeners out there of the special event coming up on September 22nd. You know, September 16th, we'll start the Space Week here on WHFR. And we'll have all kinds of themes, different themes from space, inner space, outer space, space between our ears, everything like that. And it'll culminate with the illustrated lecture of the father of Roswell, Stanton Friedman. And that's September 22nd, Saturday. Doors open at 7 o'clock, and the lecture begins at 7:30. It will be right here at Henry Ford Community College at the Andrew Mazzara Conference Center at 5101 Evergreen Road, Dearborn, Michigan. And that's just south of Ford Road and west of the Southfield Freeway near Fairlane Center. And this is being sponsored by WHFR Radio and the Michigan MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, both of which are nonprofit organizations. So you can get ticket information for the Friedman Lecture at by calling WHFR Studios at 313-845-6477. And you can also go to MIMUFON, that's MIMUFON.org, MIMUFON.org. And right on the main page there, you can find directions to order tickets right over the web. Or once again, call the studios, area code 313-845-6477. Stanton Friedman. They call him the father of Roswell. He told me, just don't call me the grandfather of Roswell. So get out and, you know, whether you're a skeptic or a believer or a UFO witness, you will be interested in examining the evidence right here at Henry Ford Community College. And seeing pictures and pictures that have been analyzed by experts. And you hear a lot about the UFO phenomenon. And you say, I don't know, I've never seen one. I don't know if it's true or not. Well, here's your opportunity to ask the man himself the hard questions, and examine the evidence for yourself. And when you're through, maybe you'll come away with a different worldview. And that would be scary, wouldn't it? Oh, you'd have to change your worldview. Well, maybe you just better deny it. No, I'm kidding. Come out and see Stanton Friedman, hear his lecture, see the evidence, hear the evidence, and make an educated decision as to whether or not this is real. I know it's real. I've seen them. At least one. Therefore, we are very happy today to have with us the chief investigator for Michigan MUFON. And she's seen many reports come across her desk of unidentified objects in the skies over Michigan, as well as having her own personal experiences. And she has been an alien experiencer since childhood, as are most who claim alien contact. And on occasion, has had second and third-party verification of these encounters. And to help protect her anonymity, we will simply refer to her as Sunny. And welcome to the show, Sunny.
Hey, David. Hi. Just like old times, huh?
Yes, indeed. I'm proud to say that Sunny is a good friend of mine.
Oh, you're sweet.
But she's done a lot of work with MUFON. In the past, Michigan MUFON, MUFON in general. And tell me something, Sonny.
Mm-hmm.
What drew your attention to the MUFON organization in the first place?
My very first interactions with MUFON was through the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
I was having a personal period in my life that was a very difficult time for me to get through. My entire family was at that time, and I was searching. Until that time, I had kept things very, very silent. It was like abuse and rape cases. You know, you just don't talk about them.
Right.
You remain silent, and you suffer. Most people do.
Mm-hmm.
And I had gotten to a point where it was not acceptable. I had already had a wonderful first marriage, and it had ended after an experience, things began to rapidly deteriorate following one. And I was not about to let anything like that happen with my second marriage. And so I started to pursue avenues to find an outlet so that I could get help. I didn't know if I was crazy. I thought I was. I thought I was going absolutely crazy.
Mm.
I came across MUFON on the Internet. So that's how I became introduced to the organization.
Mm-hmm.
A fellow by the name of Rich, who at that time was the state director, immediately responded to me over the Internet. And from there out, I mean, it's been a wonderful healing experience for everybody involved in my family.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I initially became involved with the organization.
Okay.
I found them on the web.
Okay, now you say that these experiences. First of all, how old were you when these experiences first started? And then we'll get into exactly what kind of experiences we're talking about here. How old were you?
The most vivid thing that I can recall, I was probably 5 or 6. It would have been close to that age range.
Mm-hmm.
It was intermittent for me in my experience. I've spoken with many people, and they will tell me, well, it's almost nightly for them, or it's every week or every month.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't the case for me. My experience was it would occur, and then there may be years where there wouldn't be anything.
Mm-hmm.
So the earliest experience that I can recall was about 5 or 6 years old.
Okay.
And abruptly ending At this point, I haven't had anything recently occur in my family or my life since probably about the mid-30s, my mid-30s.
Oh, I was going to say 1930s? Oh, my goodness.
No.
You preserve yourself well, Sonny.
Oh, you're, yeah. Cover girl, it does wonders. So it was intermittent. It was, in my mind, I have my master's in health science.
Mm-hmm.
I've spent a lot of years in OBGYN, a labor and delivery experience background. And for me, I can track those experiences now if I want to look at it from a very scientific, non-emotional detachment perspective, and state that they would occur at significant biological growth periods in my life.
Okay.
Yeah.
For example?
Well, at about 27 was one of the most vividly significant episodes that I can recall.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember the 5-6-year-old period. I can remember another intervention, probably it would have been 11 or 12 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
Another one in my early teenage years. Again, in my later teen, early 20s, and then toward the end of my 20s, moving into my 30s. So, I mean, distinct, almost 4 or 5 year cycles being involved there.
Okay, now describe one of these experiences for us. Now, you were on.
I'll tell you, David. It's difficult for me because even after being a decade, you know, a member of MUFON for a decade, and going through a lot of healing. And feeling a lot of I receive a lot of therapeutic value from assisting others.
Right.
I really still struggle talking about any of this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that I want to draw attention to myself about.
Mm-hmm.
The last one was when I was about 27, and I can remember this was I was living in a home that was very isolated.
Mm.
We were very far out from the city limits in an agricultural region with a lot of marsh, big lake, things like that.
Mm.
And I had built my dream home out on these few acres.
Mm.
And I'd fallen asleep on a love seat down in a great room. We had a great room with a balcony. The master bedroom was upstairs in a loft that would look down over the room downstairs.
Right.
And I'd fallen asleep on this love seat underneath a big picture window. And I remember being startled awake, and I sat up, and the entire house, and you hear this so often, and especially now since I've been doing the investigation work, the theme just constantly repeats itself. The house was so innerly illuminated with almost you can only describe it as like a living light. It had almost substance. The light was heavy,
mm-hmm.
and it was so thick that you couldn't see the surrounding items in the room. I could barely see my hand in front of me as I was sitting up, and that probably lasted, if I try to visualize, like run a movie in my head of the episode, maybe 3 or 4 seconds. Now, that doesn't sound very long, but if you count that out, coming out of a waking state, that really is a significant period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just it abruptly just disappeared. I mean, it was like somebody just flicked the switch and it was gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I woke up in a state that was pure, like mama tiger. I was like a mama tiger. I was on the prowl. I ran over to the kitchen and I grabbed two of these big cutting knives, steak knives, carving knives.
Right.
And I started going through the house, everywhere, through the entire house. Checked the children's room, went through the bathroom, the basement, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
I was determined that I was going to take care of business. If there was something there, You were going I was going to take care of business.
You were going to protect them.
I was going to protect them. Now, at that time, this was with my first husband.
Mm.
And he was working a second job at night. So this was about 3 o'clock in the morning that this occurred. And I went through the house, couldn't find a thing, and I plopped myself down on that love seat, and I sat there with these two knives in my hands, waiting all morning, in the wee or early morning hours for him to return from work.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard the car pulling up. It was probably, it was close to 6 o'clock in the morning at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And the dawn was beginning to break, and I heard the car pulling up into the driveway. It was a fairly long driveway. And I ran to the door with these knives still in my hand, and I greeted my husband at the door. And
I can imagine that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know what, though?
And he turned around and walked away, right?
No. That's why he left. No.
Ran away.
No. No, when I opened the door, he was staggering up the steps toward the door, completely white. I mean, like he was ready to pass out white.
Mm-hmm.
And for a moment, I forgot about what had happened to me and the fact that I was running around with these knives because I was staring at him, obviously in almost a state of shock, and was concerned about what had happened with him. And so he came into the house, and he sat down in a chair, and I sat down in a chair, and he said, "You aren't going to believe what I'm about to tell you." And I said, "Well, that's okay. You go first, because you're not going to believe me either." Well, what had happened? There's this small stake, little like a snaking roadway. It's a very narrow roadway that went through a marsh area in order to get back to where our home was on a dirt road. And he was driving along this marshy area, and the sun was coming up. And he said that he noticed that there was this shining in the treetops over on the left side of the road, which would have been the west side of the road, and thought that perhaps a balloon or something had gone down in the trees.
Right.
And so he pulled over on the side of the road, and he was just driving one of these tiny little red escorts, you know, no muscle car or anything.
Right.
He got out of the vehicle and walked to the other side of the road, and was trying to see if somebody was in trouble or if there had been an accident.
Mm-hmm.
And as he was walking to the other side of the road, he said that this craft rose up out of the trees. Now, oftentimes you hear that it was silent. You know, everybody says it didn't make any noise at all, but he did say that there was a droning noise associated with it.
Well, I've heard that, too, the droning, or it sounds like electric transformer.
Yes, yeah. Very, yeah. Very similar to that,
right.
And you don't hear that quite as often,
right.
You know. But he visually saw this. He could audibly hear this, and it rose very slowly. And at that point, he realized it was not a balloon. You know, this was not a balloon. It was not anything that
morning,
he was.
Huh?
What's that?
At 6 in the morning.
At 6 in the morning.
Right.
This was nothing that he was familiar with, and he just explains it as instant terror running through his body. And, you know, it's fear when you see something you don't understand, especially something of that nature. It's scary.
Right.
And so he ran back into the vehicle and got into the vehicle and sat there for just a moment as he watched it continue to rise. And then at an angle, and I couldn't quote you what the exact angle, you know, was, but it just shot out of sight in less than a second. And that's what he witnessed. Now, all of that was taking place less than 3/4 of a mile away from my home.
Mm-hmm. But what did you witness at that time?
What I witnessed was just what I told you.
Right.
I mean, I fell asleep.
Was anything happening in the house that, you know, you had dogs, right, at the time?
I had what? I'm sorry.
Dogs?
Great Dane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was there any animal reaction on that part? Or?
No, David, you know, I would like to, like, you know, it would be nice to elaborate and make up something that sounded a little more exciting.
Mm-hmm.
It was very average up until that point. That entire day was a very average day.
Right.
Until I fell asleep, which wasn't normal for me. I wasn't the type that would, you know, fall asleep downstairs. I was a bed person. I like to be in my bed, but for whatever reason, I fell asleep on the sofa downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I woke up to this light. I woke up with this sense of immediate patrol panic,
right.
Gotta protect. And then to correlate that with my, you know, with my husband's story, it starts to create a more intact picture.
Right. But you didn't see any entities in the house, any beings? Or?
No, not at that time that I recall.
Oh, I see.
No.
And have you seen beings?
See, now you're taking me out of my safety circle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's okay, because I promised that I would. So
have you seen beings?
When the reason that it's really difficult for me to talk about it is because everybody has this Whitley Strieber, you know, idea of what an entity should look like now.
Yeah.
I did not see that. What I saw as a young child, when I was 5 or 6 years old, as I stated earlier, I remember being outdoors, and I was in my nightgown.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to get away from
mm-hmm.
something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had crawled underneath my father's Ford pickup truck.
Mm-hmm.
He had this blue Ford pickup truck, and I'd crawled underneath it. I physically remember doing that.
Mm.
I was scraped up. My knees were bloodied. And I was under the center of this pickup truck, and I remember this, Lord David, I even hate talking about it, but there was this, maybe it was a 3.5, 3 foot tall thing. You know, it was a creature of some sort, of another being.
Right.
But it doesn't fit the description that a lot of people talk about. It was more of a dark blue
mm-hmm.
color,
mm-hmm.
Almost kind of like a square head, no neck, you know, very almost toad-like features.
Whoa.
Trying to drag me out from underneath this pickup truck.
Yeah.
That's the most vivid entity experience that I recall.
Well, there's been a lot of different beings reported, you know, like hundreds of them, actually.
Right.
But that has been one of them. I'm going to have to take a break right now.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get right back with our guest, Sunny. And I have to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to We Are Not Alone. And I'm David Twitchell. And we're going to be right back, so stick around.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure, what's up?
There's this girl I kind of like.
Well, if there's one thing I know, it's women.
Really?
Well, they didn't call me Velvet for nothing.
I don't get it.
Smooth. I was smooth.
Oh.
Anyway, it's easy. You just got to impress her. Show her how strong you are.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
I don't know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt, if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, ugh! Try it.
Ugh!
See, there you go. And you should dress up. Start wearing a shirt and tie.
I'll look like a dork. No.
You'll look successful.
Okay.
And finally, you can start using my cologne. The ladies love it, so don't be shy. Splash it on.
Thanks, Dad.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To find out how you can adopt, please visit our website at AdoptUSKids.org or call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Animation, illustration, multimedia design, print design, web design. Plug in to the graphic design department at Henry Ford Community College. The new graphic design program is full of choices. 5 new tracks, 5 new certificate programs, an associate degree program with 5 areas of concentration, and flexible class schedules that meet the needs of busy people. For more information, contact the graphic design department at 313-845-6487 or graphicdesign@hfcc.edu. Graphic design at Henry Ford Community College. Plug in.
Upstream from the mainstream. there's the Acoustic Alternatives. John Bomarito's show that shows you what's coming years from now. The tributaries that will find their way into other people's music years from now. But you get it sooner. Because we go up where the music is just springing fresh from the sources. So, John Bomarito's Acoustic Alternatives on WHFR.FM.
Every Sunday from 11 a.m. till 1 p.m.
WHFR.FM, serving the community for 20 years and counting.
And you are listening to WHFR.FM 89.3 on your FM dial and on your computer, WHFR.FM. Join us all the time for the best in alternative music. And right now you're listening to We Are Not Alone, and we're speaking with Sonny. And welcome back, Sonny.
Hi, David, again.
And we were discussing the abduction experience and your personal experience. And
oh, yeah, my heart is racing just even. Isn't that? That was years ago, but it's still so vivid.
Yeah. But Incident Colorado that you were going to talk about later, and, of course, we got off on other things, and it was only a half-hour show.
We tend to do that.
Yeah, everybody does. But so tell us about the Colorado experience now, given we have an hour instead of a half hour.
Oh, an hour. Wow. Well, I can fill your time for you.
Okay.
The Colorado experience. Well, I was still living out in this home. It was actually out by the Hickory Corners area. That's around the Gull Lake area in Michigan. And my children and I, I'm going to back up just a little bit, like build up to that, okay?
Okay.
And there's another thing. I wanted to add something else to the other experience as well.
Go ahead.
I don't know if you want me to finish off with that before I start something new.
Yeah, let's finish off that. Yeah.
Well, following that day, that episode, where my husband had seen this object and then I had awakened to this, you know, the house being flooded with the light and everything,
right.
I had started to become very ill. I was going from doctor to doctor, and one person was saying this, one other person was saying this. Another physician had brought up the fact that I'd had a laparoscopic investigation, and I'd never had surgery in my life.
Hmm.
I'm involved in surgery now, meaning that I work in that environment.
Right.
So I'm very familiar with technique, and I had never had surgical procedure in my life.
And yet they found evidence of operations?
Yeah, they did. And it was, I reassured them, you know, that I didn't miss this one. I mean, I know I did not go through this. But my hair started falling out. I was losing weight rapidly to the point where they were almost ready to hospitalize me to put me on IV nutrition.
Mm.
I'm not a small person, and I had dropped to about 91 pounds. So I was very rapidly becoming extremely ill. Everybody was very concerned about me, and I was too.
Mm.
And this was over the course of the year after that experience had occurred.
Mm.
The thing that changed all of that turned it around, and we have six children.
Mm.
I had become pregnant with one of my children about a year after that occurred, which never, ever should have happened. I mean, my womb was an incredibly hostile environment at that time, and the odds of that even occurring was almost nil. But then after that, after I had experienced that pregnancy, I became very healthy all of a sudden. I mean, everything just reverted itself, and I gained my health back. But there was some residual health problems from that experience.
Okay. And now, while we're on the subject, you say you have had evidence of surgery. Was there ever any evidence of, or did you ever suspect an implant, like we had Dr. Lear on the show last month.
Oh, yeah.
And we talked about these implants that they can't understand where they came from, and gave off FM frequencies, oscillating frequencies. Have you ever suspected or found, have they ever found via X-ray or CAT scan or something, an implant?
No, I've never had any of those procedures done, David. Okay. To be honest with you, you know, I did seek psychological help.
Okay.
This gets into, after we go to Colorado, it gets quite amusing, actually.
Okay.
But I did go see a psychologist because I really thought that I was crazy.
Hmm.
I was afraid that I was crazy.
Hmm.
I didn't feel crazy. I mean, like, I thought I was normal like everybody else, but I was afraid that I was going off the deep end.
Hmm.
And so I did seek help.
Hmm. And what did they say?
I'm sorry?
What was the outcome of that?
Well, I'll tell you that after I talk about Colorado.
Okay.
Do I suspect? I suspect that another race that may be tracking us or monitoring us or tagging us has some means of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
I have lived in several different locations, and even though it was years spanned, you know, between occurrences.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes 1 year, sometimes 4 or 5 years. They obviously knew where I was. So I would suspect that anybody that is involved in ongoing occurrences like this, if it's not just a, oh, I happen to be in the wrong place, you know,
mm-hmm.
Type of experience, that there must be some tracking device or some means of following that person, yes.
Right. So.
But I don't have any concrete evidence that exists in me.
Right. Now, the Colorado incident, I'm dying to hear it.
Well, I wish that I could make a movie myself about that sometimes, not because I want to, I mean, just for my family, you know, like a personal home movie.
Mm-hmm.
We were at this home in the Hickory Corners area, and my family, my children and I were setting the dinner table. We were making dinner and setting the table, just very normal domestic activities. My second husband, because I had remarried by that time, he had a business. He had a storefront, a business that he was running, and he wasn't at home yet from work.
Mm.
And we were setting the table, and a flash went off outside of the house. Now, we were way out in the country. I mean, there's not car lights, street lamps. There's nothing out there. It wasn't raining. It was a beautiful, clear sky. There was no static activity in the atmosphere.
Mm.
But it was bright enough. It caught everybody's attention. And we had a Clydesdale, and my Great Dane started going crazy.
Mm.
And the Clydesdale was running back and forth in the pasture in a state of hysteria. I was afraid he was actually going to try to jump the fence and injure himself.
Mm.
And... I was pretty spunky when I was younger. I was very spunky when I was younger, and so I grabbed a shotgun. I told the kids to stay in the house. Now, it was a foolish maneuver on my behalf. I mean, I look back now, and I just laugh at myself because it wasn't loaded, and I wouldn't have shot anybody. You know, I don't know. Maybe I could. I mean, who knows what any of us will do in the right circumstance. But so I grabbed this empty shotgun, and I'm out there in the field with my Great Dane.
Empty shotgun.
An empty shotgun.
Ah, we'll scare them.
Well, I thought, this was my initial impression, right? I thought that there was somebody out in the field with a flash camera or, you know, something. But it was a very large strobe type of a flash.
Mm.
And I was going to spook them off. Get out of here.
Yeah, good idea.
And my dog refused to follow me. We got to a certain point, and he refused to follow me any further.
Mm-hmm.
Very silent, which was odd. You know, we always had spring croakers and crickets, and it was very quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And the horse was just encircling, just circle and circle and circle over the course of his pasture.
Wow.
And I started getting a little creeped out by it at that point and went back into the house fairly rapidly and just stayed there until my husband returned. But something happened at that point, and I did tell my husband about it, and he had started noting things that weren't right, things that were going on at times that weren't right.
For example?
Didn't it? Well, there was there was a period of a week in our relationship that was very turbulent. It's when I was pregnant with this child that I was pregnant with following the episode where I was so sick.
Mm-hmm.
And for a period of about a week in my third trimester towards the end, there was a lot of... there was a lot of uncomfortable activity where John was having experiences of almost like battling demons. He would wake up, and he never did stuff like this, but he would wake up and he'd be punching in the air and trying to fend off these demon creatures. He's a very spiritual man. Very deeply spiritually rooted man, and so he interpreted most of this activity as good versus evil, demonic activity, versus holy activity. And there was one night when he woke up, and he lunged across me. Now, this was all within this week's period of time, and I was very pregnant at this time. And he lunged across me, and he was punching, literally punching at something on my side of the bed. And he said he felt it. He said he could feel the impact of his fist, and that it was almost like hitting pudding.
Pudding.
That it wasn't like hitting a structure that had bone material, like if you were to hit another human being,
right.
But it was very giving. The substance was very giving and absorbed the blow.
Yeah. Did you see this?
I did not. I woke up with him over me.
Well, how does he know that this was just not wasn't just a dream or was this a dream? Is what he's saying?
To him, he said, no way was this a dream.
Oh.
There was too much, there was too much substance involved. Mm-hmm. There was a sensation, there was a tactile sensation involved with this. And it wasn't that he just woke up and started punching. He was awakened and looked over, and there was a thing next to the bed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he wears glasses, if you ask him to, draw a picture of it or describe it, he can do an outline of it, but maybe some of the details would be fuzzy. But he said he awoke, he looked over, saw this thing. It was on my side of the bed, over me. He immediately went into that protect my home, my family mode, and began punching at it.
So he knew,
he just felt that this was evil.
So both your first and your second husband have witnessed something
definitely.
In that line. And other things that you probably are you going to tell us about them? Have they witnessed other things? Tell us that much.
Well, you should interview them. Wouldn't that be a great show to have both of my ex-husband and my current husband
Let's
on your
show?
Let's
do that sometime.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll just skip ahead, because the ironic thing about what happened was when I was seeking out help from a psychologist, a very reputable man, works with MUFON fairly closely. I know you know who he is.
Yes.
And has done wonders for many, many people. In my first encounter with him, with the doctor, I go into his office and I have my ex-husband on my right and I have my current husband on my left. Both of them went with me.
Yeah.
And this poor man didn't know what to do. He'd never quite encountered that type of a therapy session before.
Okay. So they were kind of there to tell the good doctor that, I've witnessed this too, in other words.
They were there twofold. I mean, they were there for themselves as well, because this was very disturbing to them.
Okay.
This was not a
given they were having the experience, some experiences right along with you, or witnessing things that are out of the ordinary, not normal. Am I right? Okay.
Yep, correct.
Okay.
So they were there both for themselves, but they were also there to support me.
Right. In other words, they're thinking, well, she's going to say, I see these beings, et cetera, et cetera. And he may think, well, she's a Looney Tunes, but I'm there to say no, because I have witnessed them too. Now,
definitely.
Are we all Looney Tunes?
Definitely.
That's right. The way. Yeah. Well, okay. Good.
Definitely. Yeah. I was thinking at that time that could be a possibility, though, David. I hadn't ruled that out.
Yeah.
I was thinking there might be some really good medication that could take care of it.
So what was the upshot? What did the good doctor come to conclusions on? Did he come to conclusions?
Well, it's been an unusual turn of events between myself and the psychologist.
Mm-hmm.
We actually keep in close contact now, and that was a decade ago. You know, that's a long time ago that this all began. And the one thing that I remember him saying to me was that if you're truly crazy, you don't usually get better.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if you're really psychotic, if you're truly schizophrenic, if you're experiencing these type of events, you can take medication, you can get ongoing therapy, you can join support groups, but usually, if you're really crazy, you don't get better.
Also, I've heard if you are truly crazy, you never doubt your own sanity.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
I'm going to have to take a break right here.
And, sure. I'll be here.
Okay. I'm going to have to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And we're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. Our guest is Sunny from Michigan MUFON. And we will be right back, so don't go away.
This is actor Angie Harmon working as a volunteer tutor. Here she's teaching kids to spell habeas corpus. Here, prosecutable. Angie played a lawyer on TV.
To find out how you can volunteer in your community, go to usafreedomcorps.gov or call 1-877-USA-CORPS. When you help your neighbors, you help your nation. Make a difference. Volunteer. This public service message brought to you by USA Freedom Corps and the Ad Council.
What do you really know about Detroit's official underground hip-hop spot?
Huh?
Saturday nights from 8 p.m. to 12 a.m., The Zone with Richard to D.C. proudly celebrating 89.3 WHFR.FM's 20th anniversary on air this year.
That's right.
20 years of broadcasting authentic public radio on the only station making waves across the Great Lakes, WHFR Dearborn, Detroit.
This is WHFR.FM, 89.3 FM on radio, and WHFR.FM on your computer. And we are the only station making waves. And I'm going to remind you one more time for those who are just joining us. Shame on you for just joining us, but if you are, then I'm going to remind you that September 16th starts Space Week here on WHFR. And it goes for 1 week, culminating with the lecture, illustrated lecture, by nuclear physicist Stanton Friedman, also known as the Father of Roswell. That's Saturday, September 22nd. It's going to be held right here at Henry Ford Community College at the Andrew Mazzara Conference Center. It's at 5101 Evergreen Road, Dearborn, Michigan, and just south of Ford Road and west of Southfield Expressway near the Fairlane Town Center. And it's sponsored, this lecture is sponsored by WHFR and Michigan MUFON. I'm connected with both of them, these organizations. And the tickets are $12 and $10 for students. So if you're a student here at WHFR or any place, and you got to show ID for that. And if you're a student, you get in for $10. So for ticket information, you can call the studio here at WHFR, area code 313-845-6477. And you can also go online at mimufon.org and you get the information and buy them with through PayPal right there on the computer. So I hope to see you. I'll be there. I'll be filming the event. So come out, meet Stanton Friedman, introduce yourself to me if you're a loyal listener of the show, and I'd love to meet you. That's once again Saturday, September the 22nd. Doors open at 7, lecture at 7:30. And have you ever heard Stanton Friedman speak there, Sonny?
Oh, my goodness. Now, do you know how I met Stanton?
Tell me.
Oh, he's going to kill me if I say this. It was at the last symposium in Michigan. I think, was that 2003?
Yeah, 2003.
In 2003, right. Mm-hmm. And after the big Saturday night, you know, woo-ha, we had gone up to the hotel rooms that had been rented to greet all of the guest speakers, and they had a buffet. Did you go to that? Do you know, remember that?
No, I was too tired.
You worked very hard that day.
I did. I spoke and everything. And,
you did.
Speaking takes it all out of me, you know.
Yeah, you did. Oh. If you folks have never been to a symposium, in fact, this weekend is the one, the big one, in Colorado, Denver, Colorado. It's going on as we speak.
Hmm.
So we had this massive symposium in Detroit, and after the guest speakers and the lecturers were over and people were starting to gear down for the night, they had a gathering upstairs, and I was part of that, and I'm in the bathroom.
Okay.
I'm in the bathroom. Don't worry, David, it's clean.
Okay.
And so I'm in the bathroom, because in the bathroom they had a bathtub full of ice. And they had all of the soda drinks and stuff in the bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd gone in there to grab a Pepsi or something.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm sitting on the edge of the tub, because it was quite an exhausting day for everybody mm-hmm. that helped put that on.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sitting on the edge of the bathtub, popping the top on my soda can, and mm-hmm. Stanton walks into the bathroom.
mm-hmm.
And
he wasn't looking for a soda pop.
Oh, I think he was. I think he was looking for a soda. And but we ended up sitting in the bathroom together for about an hour, just talking.
Hmm.
Fascinating man.
Yeah.
Absolutely fascinating.
Hmm.
If you shouldn't miss the opportunity, really, folks. If you haven't ever heard him speak live, you really need to do this.
Mm.
But so that's my Stanton story.
That's your Stanton story. Very good. And the story. And I appreciate you giving that plug for him, because we really want to see a sellout crowd here at the conference center here at Henry Ford Community College in Dearborn. And Stanton Friedman, I mean, everything you took. He was on the Larry King show the other night, you know.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yeah. And virtually every documentary on the UFO phenomenon, you will see Stanton Friedman being interviewed.
Mm-hmm.
And because he knows his beans about this. And he's a scientist. So,
he is.
You know, a lot of people say, that's fringe science, UFOs, this, that, and the other. Well, you know, here's a scientist, along with other scientists, many other scientists in MUFON, that study the evidence, look at the evidence, go into it skeptically, like Dr. Lear. I asked him last month, I said, what did you think about this UFO alien abduction thing? Before you got into taking out implants, he says, I thought it was a bunch of nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then he started studying the evidence.
That's
and
right.
Once you study the evidence, you're kind of hooked, because you can't put it in prosaic terms. Some of these things that happen, you can't put in prosaic terms without throwing out some of the evidence. And that would not be very scientific then, wouldn't it?
No, and I... That's why I have a lot of respect for what Stanton is doing. I come from that same background. I come from a scientific method training.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this was very difficult for me. As I moved into my adulthood, it was very difficult for me to grab a hold of and accept.
Mm-hmm.
I rebuked it in every way I possibly could, because mm-hmm. it didn't fit into the scientific world that I was working in.
Mm-hmm.
But it just didn't fit into health care. It didn't fit into, you know, science training. It was out of the norm from
right.
anything that you would read in a classroom textbook.
Right. Well.
So that's, yeah, and he definitely is all about the facts.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. And the scientific facts.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And he has to have everything proven to him. Very good. So this Colorado incident, now we're running kind of...
Now we're going to build this up to this tremendous thing, you know, and it was really more comical than anything.
Okay.
So this flash, going back to this flash in my yard with my empty shotgun.
Right.
I'm waiting for my husband to come home, and I tell him about what had happened. And he, you know, he's a science-minded guy, too. You know, he was a music teacher. He's a college music teacher and very math-oriented. And
right.
So he's trying to come up with all these explanations as to why this could have occurred, you know. And mm-hmm. his big one was it must have been a piezo effect. Now, how many times have we heard that in investigations since since I've been involved in doing investigations?
Yeah.
That term comes up quite a bit. Mm-hmm. Am I to say that it was or wasn't? I don't know for sure. But that was what he was going with because it was something that fit into his understanding.
Right.
And he was comfortable with that explanation. But what occurred over the next week or so after that had happened was I personally began to feel like a caged panther, you know, like you see these panthers just pacing back and forth in this cage. Mm. Now understand, we had a flourishing business, we had this great house in the country, we have all these kids. I mean, I wasn't unhappy, but I became very agitated, and I felt like I had to run.
Hmm.
And I didn't know where I was running to. It wasn't anything like I had in my head an understanding of a concrete destination, but I felt like I had to be someplace.
Hmm.
And so I did something very out of character for me. It shocked everybody in my world. And I packed up my children in a station wagon and drove out west.
Hmm.
Just on the spur of the moment.
Okay.
And it took us several days to get there, and I had some family that lived out in that area. And so I went and I stayed with her for about a week.
Hmm.
And I didn't understand why I was there, David. It made no sense.
Hmm.
None of this made sense at all.
Okay. You just felt compelled to do this.
It wasn't even a compelling. It was I had to do this.
Mm.
I go with that term again. It was absolutely crazy.
Mm.
Would I do it now? I would never do what I did in my life now that I did then. I look back at it and I say, how on earth did I do that? So I'm driving cross country, you know, with three kids in a station wagon by myself, and my husband is, you know, despondent. He's back home. I just pack up the station wagon and say, I got to go. I got to be someplace.
Jeez.
And from Michigan to Colorado, that's, a few hundred miles.
Yeah. You don't know. Maybe if that compulsion came up again or that need came up again, you might do it.
Who knows? I wouldn't do it the same way, though. I think I'd fly this time, you know?
Yeah.
I've gotten a little smarter.
And what happened there now?
Well, we got there. My children, I had two little bitty babies, and then my other son, who at that time was about 7 or 8 years old,
mm-hmm.
Three of our six, and it was you know, mesmerizing place. I fell in love with the area. I was down in an area, it was called Poncha Springs, down by Salida,
mm-hmm.
and I felt like I had always been there. You hear people talk in those terms, but I felt very comfortable there. It was almost as though it felt like a home environment for me.
Okay.
There was a night when we were all sleeping, all of us slept in one of the rooms that my cousin had very graciously given up.
Mm.
And I noticed, again, you know, these lights coming into the bedroom.
Mm, same as before.
Not quite the same as before.
Mm-hmm.
No. I woke up and I interpreted them as being more like headlights on a vehicle.
Okay.
But there were four of them in a row.
Mm.
And I don't know. Maybe there are some vehicles out there. I might be, you know, ignorant about that. But there were like four of them right in a row. And it didn't have the same feeling. You know, when I described that other light, it was as though the light really had a heaviness, a weight to it, you know, mm-hmm. a substance to it that you could tangibly almost grab onto. Mm. But this wasn't like that at all.
Okay.
And I remember thinking that's really odd because I am on a second story.
Oh.
So I thought car headlights, you know. Mm. But it didn't make sense to me, but yet it didn't bother me enough that I would get up to investigate it. And I remember just falling back to sleep again, although I was thinking that's really weird.
Mm.
The next day, I took the kids and we drove out along this long stretch. At that point, now I'd been out there for about 2 weeks, and I was determined I'm staying. I'm not going back.
Mm.
I had called my husband and told him, pack up the computer and mail it to me, and I'm just staying.
Mm.
We had drove out into this fairly desolate area, and I had decided this is where I was going to stay. I found this little house. I even had the deposit put down on it. It very, very rapid succession, these things occurred.
Mm.
And I would have stayed had my father not called me and said that, you know, I really needed to stop this and I needed to come home.
Mm.
It was my father, actually, that was the influence that brought me back here again. Mm. I was that determined that I was going to stay there.
Sonny, we only have a couple minutes
sure.
left, so...
Oh, well, we're not going to be able to finish the story then. It's going to be a cliffhanger. Sorry.
Tell me the story. I can edit. Come on.
Okay. So I pack up the kids and I say, okay, I'm going to come home. I'm at a diner. The people are all abuzz at this diner. There was a newspaper in the diner, and the waiter had come up, and I said, what's going on? There's, you know, all this commotion. And he said, well, there was this big UFO sighting over there in this area. Well, they had these photographs, and this person had taken about an hour of footage of this craft that was eventually it was confiscated by NORAD.
Hmm.
And this UFO was spotted right over the house that I had just put my deposit down on.
All right.
And,
oh, my goodness.
Then after coming home, all of this settling in, I came across this scrapbook of things from when I was a child. And I had, when I was about, well, I was in the sixth grade, I had created this slide set, and they were hand pictures that I had drawn in the sixth grade. And I put them, I did everything, photographed the pictures, turned them into slides, put them in the frames, and I did this class presentation that I had completely forgotten about called UFOs Are Real.
Mm.
And it was about 15, 20 slides that had these hand-drawn pictures of all of these things representing what I interpreted as being UFO-related as a child.
Right.
And three of the slides showed the Cotopaxi region where that house was. And there was a mountain ridge. There were two mountain ridges. And on one side, there were all of these UFOs.
You had drawn this?
I had drawn this in the sixth grade.
Like out of your imagination, you drew that in the sixth grade.
I drew it out of someplace.
Wow.
And it identically matched the area that I had traveled to.
Mm.
Yeah. There were several other photos or sketches also, slides that correlated with that episode mm. in my life from
yeah.
the sixth grade.
Right. Well, if there's one thing you'd like to tell our listeners, what would it be?
What would it be? It's okay to reserve yourself. If you're feeling afraid and you've had experiences and you don't understand them, don't feel foolish. Don't hold them in. It will eat you up. It mm. really will. You need to talk to people. You need to talk to quality people. Don't be afraid to approach professionals in the area. There are professionals that will listen to you. They will not laugh at you. MUFON can get you a list of those people that you can contact. But don't suffer in silence. Don't do that to yourself. Don't do that to your family.
Right.
And continue to support our mission.
Right. Very good. Sonny, I want to thank you very much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, David. I wish that we had like another hour. Oh, I could just talk about so much with you.
Well, we can if we do this again. How's that?
All right, it's a deal.
Okay.
It's a deal.
Thank you very much for joining us. That was Sunny, the chief investigator for Michigan MUFON. And if you have any questions or comments for me, you can write to me at, you can email me, I should say, at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. And you may also call the WHFR studios at area code 313-845-9676. That's also for the Stanton Friedman tickets. Or you can email at whfr@hfcc.edu. And please visit my website at ufoimplications.com. That's ufoimplications.com. And please watch my TV version of We Are Not Alone in the Downriver area on Channel 20. That's Comcast Cable. On Tuesdays at 6 and repeated at 10 p.m. And stay tuned to WHFR for the best in alternative music. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Saturday of each month at 10 a.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. And until then, I'm David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
You're listening to 89.3 WHFR Dearborn. We're bringing you non-commercial radio from Henry Ford Community College. Good morning, my name is Bill Keith, and it is a pleasure to be here with you on a Labor Day weekend Saturday. And a beautiful day it is. Looks like we're going to have a gorgeous weekend. Chance to enjoy time with family and friends and enjoy some great music. Here's some new music from Buffalo Tom. Their new CD is called Three Easy Pieces. And this is called You'll Never Catch Him on 89.3 WHFR.FM. We're making waves.